The Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Thank you for doing that. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is the producer. I see that Jen Psaki, the White House spokesperson, is answering questions from the reporters. They do that every day now. And one of the questions she was asked was what's going on with the Chicago Public Schools and the Chicago Teachers Union. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot was on MSNBC. Both of them maybe on a national stage talking about what's happening with the, what is it, second or third largest school district, third largest school district in the country. So it's not just something we are following here in Chicago, but that the whole nation is tapping in on. I guess if we're the goose, maybe they're the gander. If Chicago can do it, everybody else ought to be able to. If we have reservations or the teachers are upset, maybe other unions across the country will follow that as well. Elise Glink joins us now on WGN. I know that's not exactly business news, but all of these things are kind of interconnected, aren't they, Elise?
They are, and we're so close to the end, John. I mean, new numbers are coming out all the time, both on the number of people who have been vaccinated in the U.S., but also a new Congressional Budget Office projection that was released looking that the American economy is looking much stronger than anticipated.
What percentage of the population is vaccinated now?
A little over 7%, about 7.2%, has had at least one vaccination shot. We're still low, you know, like a little over 1% for both. But those numbers are growing every day, and it translates into a lot of people.
Are you surprised to see the fact that the restaurants are able to open up at 25% in Chicago now, that our infection rate 3 days, I guess today would be 4 days straight, is below the level that they needed? I think, I don't have the number in front of me, we had about 6.5%, something like that.
Yeah.
But I was pleased to see that. It, to me, it seemed like just a week ago we were at 10, and now we are below 7.
Yeah, we're looking pretty good. The strict protocols have helped us, and the fact that we're starting to get the vaccinations rolled out across Chicago, very pleased to see that the state has coordinated with some of the major healthcare companies like Walgreens, CVS, where you now can actually go on. There's a way to sign up for those vaccines. People who got the vaccine and they're, you know, people who are over the age of 65 who qualified versus with their comorbidities, they're getting signed up no problem for the second shot. So it feels like the rollout, which was bulky at first, is starting to pick up steam, and I think we're seeing that in the lower infection rates.
7 days ago, the city was at 7.2. Pete just whispered in my ear, now we are at 6.0, so they are able to open up. Do you think that if the news goes that way, the infection rate goes down, the vaccination rate goes up, is that going to take some of the urgency out of getting people stimulus checks or other sorts of financial aid?
Well, I think it does mean that maybe the stimulus that's been out there doesn't, the next round of it doesn't have to be quite so extensive. So, for example, President Biden is suggesting a $1.6 trillion stimulus package. The Republicans have countered with a $618 billion stimulus package. Still significant numbers. I should point out that even $600 billion or $618 billion is still almost as big as the biggest one that we ever did 10 years ago in the Great Recession. So this is still a lot of money, even though we hear a lot of talk about billions of this and billions of that. You know, $600-900 billion, these are very real numbers. And so what they're saying is that we want to have, you know, $1,000 checks, but we want it more targeted towards the people who are out of work and who still really need it, as opposed to people who are earning, let's say, a combined $150,000 a year.
Yeah, I'm watching the threshold go down and the amount go down. The Republicans want $1,000. Not that that's necessarily how it's going to go, but that's the pressure being put on the Biden administration. And who knows, maybe that has some legs. Let's pick it up here in just a minute. Let's continue our conversation with Elise Glink, real estate and financial wellness expert. She's the owner of Think Glink Media. Visit thinkglink.com. By the way, we were just talking about the economy overall. I don't know. When Steve Alexander was doing the numbers, he said that some analysts say that the economy will be back to where it was next year. Obviously, the markets are at record levels. But what metrics are you looking at, and how do you score the recovery right now, Elise?
Right. I think it's actually going along okay, but there are a lot of people who are getting hurt. So we saw at the end of the year, the numbers that came out last week, the economy overall declined to about 2.5% for the whole year, which sounds like a really small number, but in fact, it was the largest number since World War II, 1946. And that shrinkage has really meant that a lot of people have been hurt. But what we're seeing is that companies are starting to adjust to the whole idea of the pandemic. We've got people who weren't able to work from home when this started last March, who are now able to work from home. We're seeing people get vaccinated, like we just talked about. And so when the Congressional Budget Office started to do its work, and remember, they don't take sides here, right? So they're nonpartisan. But they were looking at large sectors of the economy that have adapted better and more rapidly to the pandemic than expected. And so what they're seeing is that the unemployment rate is going to fall to 5.3% at the end of the year. That was down from an initial projection of 8.4%, so that was good. They think that the economy is going to grow faster, and that people who are out of work now, because we're still missing about 9.5 million jobs, by the end of next year, even the jobs will come back. So the economy will sort of boom ahead, jobs will follow, and they feel good about it. I'm in no position to say, well, they're not right.
Dow's up 248 right now, and the NASDAQ, Steve pointed out a moment ago, is up 325 points. When the dust settles on this crash course we all got in short selling, what do you think the takeaway is going to be? What have we learned from this, Elise?
I think we've learned that social media and some of these new platforms have really changed the way that risk has to be mitigated for these big hedge funds, which have been calling the shots for a very long time, by the way. I don't know that anybody feels badly that the one or two of these hedge funds is down 50% over the course of the weekend. These guys all have plenty of money. And by the way, they are all guys. But I do think there's going to be a reckoning, because a lot of these small traders on Robinhood are finding that they weren't able to trade when they wanted to. And that's really a cornerstone of our marketplace, that if you want to sell your shares, you can. And this was a good reminder that you can't always. And the reason that they couldn't, of course, is that Robinhood didn't have the capital to back up the sales, just in case these people didn't turn up with their shares. And so I think that will also need some sort of a reckoning. But this truly was a Robin Hood scenario where the little guys took on the big guy, and it looks like they all made buckets of money.
Why did you mention that it's mostly guys or all guys that run hedge funds?
Well, because it's true. There are very, 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 very few women who are at the top of the hedge fund world. It is mostly guys, and it is frankly mostly white guys.
Talk to me for a second about real estate. Real estate taxes. I just saw something from Maria Pappas's office about the installment of the Cook County property taxes through May 3rd with no late fee. She just dropped off, didn't she? Let me just mention this. Thanks to a change in the law, property owners have 2 extra months to pay their first installment, Cook County property tax bills without a late fee, through May 3rd. Maria Pappas has just mentioned that today. The pandemic continues to test us, she said. The waiver of late fees offers some relief to the thousands of homeowners. If Cook County is giving you a couple more months to pay your taxes, I wonder if other counties will follow suit too. Seems to make sense. I'm sure they're having trouble in Will and Grundy and other counties.
That's right, John, that everybody's having, not everybody, but there are a lot of people who are having trouble paying their taxes. And we have not yet seen the other counties step forward, but Cook County certainly has the largest number of taxpayers in any county that I'm aware of, and certainly people who have been hardest hit, the communities of color who are part of the different parts of Cook County have been hit the worst during COVID. So I think it's great that they are pushing that back, allowing more time to meet the deadline so you don't have to worry about losing your home because of late payment of taxes.
Your book is 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask. The real estate market is so hot right now. I see people jumping in on properties sometimes that they maybe haven't had a chance to vet as thoroughly as they might or personally think about it as long as they normally would, but they're already going to pay over ask and they don't want to lose on a property. For those who feel rushed, what advice do you have for them that are buying right now?
Well, the good news is that we're just at the beginning of the spring home buying season. And I can say that even though we've had 2 feet of snow, it feels like, over the last couple of days, with more to come this coming weekend. You know, spring officially begins for real estate the day after the Super Bowl. So we know that's coming up. But this has been a very unusual cycle for real estate. And, you know, the good news is that more houses are coming on the market every single day. So the sellers are starting to act like it's spring, but the downside is that if you're buying, you will have to learn how to be faster when you make your offers, and that's simply because nationally we're at a low point that we've ever been at for the number of homes that are available for sale compared to the number of buyers who wants to buy them. So in Chicago, what you're seeing is in most of the suburban areas, sales have picked up, sales are strong, which is really nice to see for a change. In the city, condos have been slower to, you know, get on the market. But a well-priced, beautiful-looking property, whether it's a condo or a house or a townhouse, is going to sell quickly. And so you have to figure out what it is you want to buy, what you can actually spend, and go from there. I will say, over the weekend, Sam and I, my husband Sam, who's a real estate attorney, we caught sight of some unbelievable mortgage interest rates, John. So for a 30-year rate, for a person who has good credit, the going rate was something like 2.6%. And if you were willing to do a 10-year fixed, so the loan would be fixed for the first 10 years and then it turns into a one-year adjustable, we saw an advertised rate at 2.18%, which is just incredible to be fixed for 10 years.
Well, essentially, that's an ARM then, right?
It is. That's an adjustable rate mortgage. But these are really interesting, these two-step mortgages. You can get them fixed for 10 years or 7 years, and then after that, they convert. And you might want to do that if you're only going to be in a place for, say, 7 to 10 years, because you're going to save a half a percent on the interest rate, which, you know, for a good-sized loan could be several $1,000s a year going forward. And that's, you know, that's the kind of money where when you're thinking about it and you're trying to, you know, lock in something, you might actually ask, what else have you got? What other programs do you have that I would qualify for? Which is kind of neat.
Are the adjustments on some ARMs, though, capped, like it can't go up more than 2.5 points or something like that?
They are. Typically, adjustable rate mortgages are capped at either 1 or 2%. It can't go up by more than 1 or 2% per year over the life of the loan. And so the maximum amount for a 2% tenure to go up would probably be, it could go no higher than, say, 8%. And I got to tell you, it's going to never be anywhere near that, at least in the next few years. So you take a little bit of a risk, but over the last 25 years, you would have been done better with an adjustable rate mortgage than a fixed rate mortgage.
Well, especially if it's 10 years before the adjustment goes up. I see plenty of people who know well they're going to move for the kids or they're going to move into a retirement home or they're going to do whatever. But I mean, 10 years is for a lot of people a pretty long time.
Sure. And even if it went up 1% at the end of 10 years, now you're paying 3% on your mortgage instead of 2%. It's still an incredible amount. So now you get, you know, you're really looking at a very long time horizon. To your point, the typical family stays in their home between 7 and 10 years. That's been on the shorter side the last 10 years. So I think there's a real opportunity there to save even more money.
I know this is just an anecdote, but a friend of mine was looking for a house in Niles, Michigan, southwest Michigan, Berrien County and the Lakes County there in southwest Michigan, like a lot of Chicagoans. And it's been killing him. He goes out there all the time. And by the way, the he isn't me, although there's plenty of people like me who are just kind of noodling around, looking from Zealand
on around.
And the stuff just goes like that. Found a place he likes, turned his head around, it was gone. You just and be ready to pay the list because it's just so competitive. So many people in Chicago are looking one way or another to get just around the lake right now.
Yeah, they are. If you look at the North Shore, the number of homes available for sale in places like Wilmette, Kenilworth, Glencoe, Highland Park is way down over where it was exactly a year ago. So there's less to choose from. Mm. Prices are up, yeah. And that should make sellers happy.
And it does make you wonder if after the Super Bowl, you know, when is this mother load of inventory that some folks are waiting for going to show up? When are we going to get something else to look at? And right now, it really is kind of thin pickings.
Yeah, it really is. But get out there, take a look, find a good agent, and you'll get on top of it. Eventually, it'll be your turn, too.
Here's the title of that book again, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. I think second-time home buyers should read it, too. ThinkGlink.com. Okay, Elise, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Appreciate it, John.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman's the producer on Mondays. Jim Dahlke joins us. Jim's a senior editor at Chicago Inno. Visit ChicagoInno.com. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Great to be here.
Anybody come up with a high-tech way to shovel snow over the weekend by any chance?
You know, there are Uber for snowplows. A handful of companies have kind of taken this business model, operating here in Chicago and across the country. So, if you need a snow plow, if you need someone to come shovel your driveway, it is, but a click of the phone away.
It's funny you mentioned that. I didn't even think about that. But last week we interviewed one of those guys who runs one of those companies, and he should be advertising on this station right now if he was really smart. But that's what they describe it as. It's Uber for snow plows and snow shoveling. If you want somebody, the same way you would go on your phone and get a ride, you hit the button, and then within 2 hours, somebody's there. And instead of having an annual contract, you've got $40 or something like that to do your driveway, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, if it's, you get a extra big snow winter, you use them a little bit more. If it doesn't snow much, you don't use them much at all. And so, yeah, it's kind of an as needed thing. But, certainly, it's an interesting area, especially as the summertime comes around. They can do lawn mowing and other kind of landscaping services as well.
What's the big story on the NO front right now? What are you looking at?
Yeah, so we took a look at an acquisition that happened last month, Tasty Trade, a company here in Chicago you might be familiar with. They do an investing platform and do some financial media. And just, last month they were acquired for $1 billion. So a big exit for them. They were bought by IG Group out of London. And really the big news here, Tasty Trade co-founded by Christy Ross. She, a woman in Chicago's tech scene, really kind of a milestone acquisition here. You do not see a lot of billion-dollar tech acquisitions from women-led companies. Really kind of a rarity here. We reached out actually to PitchBook, a firm that kind of tracks venture capital across the country. And since 2016, just 15 other companies in the U.S. that have a female founder have hit the billion-dollar exit mark. And just 5 of those have reached it via an acquisition rest that went public. So really kind of Christy Ross and Tasty Trade joining rarefied air here with this big acquisition. Another interesting detail of the deal that she mentioned during our interview is that it's going to create dozens of millionaires right here in Chicago based on the equity structure they gave their employees. So, not just the founding team, not just the investors getting a nice little return here, but some of the earliest employees of the company are also going to benefit as well.
What does Tasty Trade do?
So Tasty Trade, really kind of what they started out was kind of creating a media platform. So they do, live stream video, kind of talking about the markets, and they do shows based on the financial industry. And then they also created Tasty Works, which is an investment platform. Actually, within their company, since they launched in 2011, they've launched 10 businesses within their business. So kind of creating sort of these smaller firms. So essentially, Tasty Works is a high-speed tech brokerage firm, and they've created Dough, which is a mobile-first brokerage firm. So they've been able to spin out some of these other smaller businesses that have really driven revenue for them.
They're trading on the food names, but they're not in the food sector. That's been very hot on the tech front, but this isn't a food delivery service, huh?
Yeah, no, this is a fintech company, so purely financial here. But yeah, they really have leaned into the food businesses and for their name at least. And as you mentioned, food businesses have been absolutely blowing up during all of last year and into this year.
Saw a commercial on TV last night for a rapid tested home kit, and I don't remember if it had a Chicago technology connection. But do we have something going on that front as well?
In terms of a COVID testing?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a company called Tempus, actually, that is led by the co-founder of Groupon, Eric Lakofsky, and they're doing a lot of testing of the coronavirus vaccine or the coronavirus test. And they have actually worked with Yale on a saliva test that they're planning to roll out. So don't believe that's hit shelves just yet. But big, fast-growing tech company here in Chicago is working with the university on some COVID testing.
Who fronts the money for that? Is that an angel investor? Does the government help something out like that? How does that get up and go?
Yeah, so Tempus, for example, is a really Chicago sort of most funded, most valuable tech company. So a lot of investment dollars have gone into Tempus. But yeah, they are working with the governments on these contracts as well. So the government will connect with Tempus on a project like this and fund a project like this. But yeah, funding never been an issue on the Tempus side of things because they've raised about $1 billion of equity and debt since they were founded just 4, 5, 6 years ago. So really one of Chicago's most well-funded and highly valued tech startups.
There's a story in the New York Times over the weekend about how when you develop a COVID vaccine, people say, well, great, well, then just go to scale. Make, instead of 1,000 of them, make millions of them. They said that if the vats get bigger, sometimes the stew that you're making in which the vaccine gets formed doesn't act the same way. So just to say make more, it's not Kool-Aid. It's not sugar and water. These are things that are growing in fat cells, and there needs to be times and procedures, and it's I'll say delicate. I don't know if they would, but it's not as simple as just mixing more up and making it faster. I think that's something we all need to be aware of right now.
Exactly. Yeah, it's easy for me to be armchair quarterback and say, go faster, go faster, go faster, but it's certainly more complicated than it sounds.
And it also makes me appreciate the sort of data that they are collecting. I saw this thing about OCIENT. Am I saying that right? OCIENT?
Yeah, OCIENT.
And OCIENT is they're a data mining or a data collection service. Is that correct?
So it's more data analysis. So what OCIENT is a Chicago startup that works with large enterprises to help them make sense of their own data. So it's not about like going and getting data. It's mostly understanding the data that companies are creating. So, you know, think large financial firms, large, you know, ad tech businesses, you know, even governments, safety, you know, any business that creates massive, massive, massive amounts of data and needs, you know, a tool to help understand it. That's what OCIENT is. And really interesting startup just last week raised $40 million in new funding. It's led by Chris Gladwin, who is very well known in Chicago tech circles. He sold his last business, CleverSafe, to IBM for $1.3 billion. He started Music Now back in the late 90s, which was basically a precursor to iTunes, really kind of an early, early pioneer in sort of online you know, music libraries, music data. And so really a successful serial entrepreneur. And this is his next venture, and got $40 million last week, some big names behind this firm as well. And, you know, they're growing very fast and kind of deploying their tech with some large businesses as we speak.
You wrote about Catalytic. Finish with that. What is going on there?
Yeah, so speaking of well-known investors that are backing Chicago startups, Catalytic is a software firm here in Chicago. They work on workflow automation. So similar-ish to OCIENT in a way that they're kind of helping companies, you know, work faster and sort of make sense of their data. They created a no-code software that helps companies sort of automate different business processes. And just last week, they raised funding from NQTEL, which is actually a nonprofit VC firm funded by the CIA and other intelligence agencies. And so basically what this sort of funding will allow Catalytic to do is to kind of get their business software into the U.S. government sectors and kind of helping those agencies with some workflow automation stuff. So pretty cool investment for a local Chicago startup.
Who knew? Actually, Jim Dahlke knew, senior editor, ChicagoInno.com. Nice to talk to you, Jim. Let's talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
You betcha. It's 12:42 on WGN. Steve Grzanich has more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's will pay many of its employees to take time off to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Workers at company-owned restaurants will receive 4 hours of bonus pay for getting vaccinated. The offer does not apply to franchise McDonald's locations. Other companies offering to pay their workers to be vaccinated include Aldi, Trader Joe's, Dollar General, and the parent of Olive Garden. A new list is out of the best places to work from home. The list compiled by Money Magazine is based on adequate internet service to support multiple people working, as well as things like video conferencing. Naperville came in third. Reston, Virginia was number one. Naperville has nabbed a spot on Money's Best Places to Live list 3 times, most recently in 2019, getting nods for its good schools, affordability, activities, and general family friendliness. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Amy.
Hi, John. How's it going today? Happy Monday.
Likewise to you. So Super Bowl Sunday is right around the corner now. I saw you were looking at a story about the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, that's right. I really think the economic impact of the Super Bowl has been an interesting thing to track. Every single year, it's always interesting looking at the ads, who's spending, what that does for tourism dollars, or where it's being held, things like that. And always look at after the Super Bowl, what that economic impact was. This year is going to be very, very different. So it's going to be held in Tampa, of course. And looking at what that number usually is, that's about a $300 to $500 million boost. Economically. When we're thinking about all the people that travel there, the hotels,
just
the restaurants.
Just to the town itself. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like for the whole area there. And so the University of Central Florida's Institute for Economic Forecasting has been kind of had that same question mark this year. Well, what's that going to look like? Tickets are only going to be about a third of stadium capacity. There's, of course, you know, a reduction to dining. There's, you know, travel restrictions, things like that. So what is that going to look like? Tailgating is prohibited. A lot of different companies are changing the way they're spending their advertising dollars. So they're right now saying that may not even be about half of that mark. And what I think is kind of very interesting about this and other areas that are very, very dependent on tourism is that the pandemic has really highlighted that when in areas that are so very dependent on tourism for its local economy. We're thinking, you know, Orlando and Lake Tahoe, places like that have really struggled more than other areas by issues relating to the pandemic of how they get by during this time. So I'm going to be watching that with great interest to see what happens after the Super Bowl, what kind of numbers get released, looking at that when they're only forecasting, you know, half or less of what they are usually taking in there.
I also saw over the weekend that the Super Bowl last year generated $550 million in ad sales. TV ads, $550 million for the network. They are not going to get those same dollars this year. There will be commercials. Budweiser's out, Pepsi's out, et cetera. But other people will take the slack. But it's not going to generate that kind of revenue either.
Yeah, that's right. And Pepsi's really changed their strategy this year. They're looking to put more of their spend in the halftime show instead of running the big ad. Some of their other brands, Mountain Dew and Frito-Lay, they're going to run ads during that. But their, you know, the big Pepsi message is going to be absent. Budweiser, of course, that we talked about last week, they're completely changing their strategy this year. So I think the pandemic has really highlighted areas that are so dependent on events and tourism. And we think when we think about that being hotels, excuse me. But in fact, that's so far reaching, especially for big things like the Super Bowl and having that Super Bowl ad, tens of millions of dollars that are just getting moved around. And a lot of economists are kind of scrambling to predict what that's going to look like and what that's going to be, especially when it has such a big bearing on a local budget.
You always follow the airlines for us. Did that snowstorm and all of the cancellations just when the airlines thought, oh, good, we can start to fly. The only thing that'll screw us up is a major snowstorm. We had a major snowstorm.
Yeah, that's exactly right. About a quarter, it was a little more than a quarter of departures from O'Hare got canceled yesterday. But there's other things down the line. As that winter storm system has moved east, airlines are really scrambling, trying to get people, even in the days ahead of it, trying to get people to take earlier flights. They're saying, okay, we've already waived some change fees during the pandemic to boost, you know, to boost ticket sales, but we won't even charge you for a fare difference. We just want you to get out of here. So they're really scrambling. But look ahead here for this. So if you or, you know, if someone's got to do some traveling and connecting through an East Coast hub, this is going to be a couple of days of backup that all the airlines are really scrambling with, trying to get people to maybe hit a more southern point on the East Coast and figure out a new way to their destination, or rerouting them completely to a different carrier, a different you know, change place. A lot of people tend to change in Charlotte. That's a very, very big hub. So there's going to be a lot of traffic there of people getting rerouted from more northern cities. So I think it's going to be kind of a messy few days to travel till everybody kind of gets settled of where they're going to go. But, you know, heads up, if anybody listening has some travel plan that might put you through anywhere near all of this, you may want to think about calling the airline and seeing if you can change planes in another city or change your trip plans a little bit.
One last story. Speaking of transportation, Google and Ford have a venture now, right?
Yeah, this is really interesting. And I think the partnerships with tech companies and vehicle companies are just going to be an interesting space to watch for the next few years. So the deal, the terms of the deal weren't fully disclosed. So we don't know how much we're talking here, but Ford and Google have made a partnership. It's 6 years. They're going to start putting Google's Android operating system into Ford and Lincoln vehicles starting in 2023. And Google is going to help develop new customer service and internal operations technology for the company. So it's a very big partnership here. Google's going to be doing a whole lot with Ford. Again, the terms of that were not disclosed. I assume it is quite a big deal to be taking on that much of the industry. But you know, the other places we've been watching here is Rivian. Of course, they have a plant in Normal. They have a partnership with Ford, and they're going to be building the F-150s for Ford to be electric. And then of course Tesla, lots of eyes on Tesla and their business model. But again, I think it's going to be an interesting space, but to have this Google technology as not just part of the vehicles, but also on the production line to help speed up and help out with supply line and the manufacturing process. It's going to be very interesting to watch Ford in the next couple of years.
So this partnership is more on the production end, not on the user end. For instance, we've already got maps built into our dashboard. I was wondering if there'd be more voice to text or voice to command, you know, interface with the vehicle. You're not talking about that necessarily.
Well, it's going to do both of those things. So it's going to be both for the workers in there making the vehicles, but also for the end user. So maps and some voice command is already going to be in there. But Ford will offer customers built-in Google apps. So you will, if you have a Google login, which most people do, you'll be able to have kind of a little more seamless experience with the things you search and the map places you go, but also voice technology. So it's going to trickle throughout the Ford ecosystem.
Kind of tricky, right? Because you want to make it user-friendly, but if it's too friendly, I'm driving a car here. Maybe I shouldn't be tapping my dashboard, Googling things as I'm going down the highway. You know, it's kind of it's funny that you can do it. Doesn't necessarily mean you should. I'm out of time. Amy, good to talk to you again today.
Thanks so much, John.